shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here. Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, shooting from the lip.
Hi, good afternoon, and welcome to another edition of Shooting from the Lip on Sputnik International with me, John Gaunt. Now, this is a guest today I've been trying to get for months and months. I love him when he's on Sky News doing the newspapers. He always speaks his mind, and I want to get his views on what is happening in this mad, mad world at the moment. He is the rapper, the author, and the podcaster, and weightlifter I saw today as well. His name is simply Zuby.
Shooting from the lip.
Hi, Zuby.
How's it going, John?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for joining us. Let's start off with one of the tweets. I love some of your tweets, but the one you've put out today. At the rate we're going, the word racist is going to be completely meaningless by 2030. People are using it so liberally and recklessly that it's losing its power and purpose. If everything is racist, then nothing is. Label inflation. Expand on that for me.
Yeah. Wow. I think that was, I think I nailed most of the points in there. So essentially what I'm saying is that we're living in a time now, and this has been going on, I'd certainly say, especially over the past decade, where words like racist, racism, fascist, Nazi, homophobic, transphobic, Islamophobic, all these phobias and isms, people are really just weaponizing these terms and applying them to absolutely everything. Just in the past week, we've seen everything from voice actors of cartoon characters to pancake syrup to Uncle Ben's rice to cereal, etc. We're seeing once you've reached the stage where foodstuffs and drinks and things in academia and in schools, et cetera, when everything is being called racist, it just loses its term. I use the term label inflation because just like with money, if a government keeps on printing money, then over time it loses its value. And I think that the word racism is specific and it is powerful. Calling someone a racist is a legitimate charge, right? That's not something that we should be throwing around so flippantly as a society. And I think that by doing so, this has a lot of long-term potential damage and repercussions.
Do you think that in a way, by sort of saying Uncle Ben's rice is racist, or white actors can't voice Asian characters, for example, or characters of colour in cartoons, is there a danger this could actually increase real racism? Because white people go, I've had enough of this, this is nonsense.
Yeah, I think that happens. And I think it also provides cover for people who are genuinely racist. Mm. So there was a time, you know, growing up, if I heard somebody was a racist, I took that seriously. Now, if I see or hear somebody being called racist, it's almost getting to the point where I'm curious to know what they said, right? Because oftentimes people just use this to say somebody I disagree with, right? Or somebody whose politics I'm not totally on board with. And yeah, exactly. So like you said, I think people get fed up with that on one side. But then for people, you know, I think we live in one of the least racist countries in the world at one of the least racist time periods in the world. But racism does still exist. And to sort of lump everything together, whether you're talking about cartoon characters or you're talking about foods, to lump that in with some sort of like true egregious racial prejudice and mistreatment is just wrong. And it makes it very difficult for all sensible and normal people to delineate between them. It's a little bit like how they've overused the term far right so much that I saw the other day that they used one media channel used the term extreme far right, right? Because they've already used far right so many times now that if you're now trying to talk about people who are genuinely, genuinely far right or have, you know, Nazi sympathizers or KKK members or something, right? Like if you're going to call me or some normal conservative or libertarian far right, then you now need a new label to apply to, you know, people with genuinely dangerous and hateful views.
Okay, let me just be clear. We're going through a list of things just for a moment then. Uncle Ben's rice and the maple syrup and Auntie Jemima, that's not racist as far as you're concerned. And what about white actors playing black characters in cartoons, only in animation? Is that racist?
None of the above are racist, no. Not even close. In fact, I think you almost have to be a little bit racist to think that those are racist.
Mm. I agree.
Right? Like, okay. I don't think any normal person would think that. And nobody did until 3 minutes ago.
And where has this come from recently? I mean, it all goes back, doesn't it, surely, to BLM, the Black Lives protest, or Black Lives Matter. And I noticed that you were one of the first people to talk about the, and it is a murder, let's accept it, the murder of George Floyd by a racist white policeman. How has this developed into what we've got
Can
at the
I
moment?
Can I jump in there and just and just say something there? That we don't know what was in that policeman's heart. Is it possible that he's racist? Yes, it is possible. But we don't actually have any evidence that that was done in racism. We don't have any evidence for that.
So what you're saying is it could have been the same if it was a white guy on the floor?
Have you heard of Tony Timpa?
Yeah, I have.
Okay, well, they've done it. Yes, I am.
So it's brutality is what you're saying.
Yeah, again, I just think we need to be careful about using those terms, because I'm not saying that Derek Chauvin was not a racist. And, you know, that could have been his motivation. But as of now, I have not seen any evidence that suggests that. So as far as I know, he's a bad dude who was acting out of order. And I believe he murdered George Floyd. But I'm hesitant to use that term without any evidence for it.
What about the argument that a lot of BLM put forward, which is the American police have done this many, many times to black people? Do the figures back that up, in your opinion?
Okay, so if we want to talk about real figures, I believe that the amount of people, so out of all the people killed by police, this includes, armed, unarmed, justified, unjustified, etc., I believe that black people in America, I think it's about 30%. I think it's 25 to 30% of the people killed are black. So that means that 70% are not. And sure, I know BLM focuses on that 30%, and a lot of people, including the media, tend to focus on that 30%. But by ignoring the 70%, a very false narrative is being painted here. Now, I understand that black people make up 13% of the American population, so there's no question that that is disproportionate. And that leads to further conversations and more things that need to be analyzed. But I'm very hesitant not to get caught up in the thing that vast majority of people do. And I think most people are well-meaning, but most people don't look at the statistics, and most people just go along with the anecdotes and the specific things that they see, because they can name all of the black people who have been killed by the police in the U.S., right? They know the names, and people say, yeah, say their name. You know, that's a hashtag. But the more white people are killed by the police every single year in America, and very few people can name even one of them.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I mean, again, it's a much wider conversation. I think it's an important conversation to have around police brutality. But I think that by taking the myopic view that it's all down to racism is simply false.
Okay. Have you been surprised by the worldwide growth, and particularly here in the UK, growth of the BLM protests?
Yes, I have, in a way. Although I know when the USA sneezes, the UK catches a cold. So I'm surprised on one hand, but not totally.
Okay. And what do you think about the way now that major corporations, major advertisers are, you know, made so desperate to show that they're on the side of BLM? What's that all about?
That's a good question. It's a very good question. And I don't know. I try to not engage in mind reading. The most positive and charitable interpretation is that they genuinely care about this movement and that they are very concerned about racism and police brutality. The more skeptical and cynical side of me suggests that this is them protecting their own butts from any sort of accusations, and also jumping on something which is hot and trendy and which they can use to capitalize and make even more money off of the deaths of black people. That is the least charitable and sort of most venomous interpretation. Which one it is, it's probably a combination, depending on who you're talking about. And I don't know what's in their hearts. It's most likely somewhere in the middle of those two things, though. But it's certainly opportunistic, and maybe that's from good motives. But I don't know, you know, with these companies and these corporations, like, a lot of stuff just comes down to the bottom line. And whether that means throwing up, turning everything rainbow all month in June, or it is you know, jumping on whatever hashtag or trend is popular, then I don't put it above them that that they wouldn't do that, even if they don't themselves don't particularly care. They just see it's another thing that other people care about and they can capitalize on it.
Okay. What do you make of the fact that there's these accusations that Black Lives Matter, the actual group, is Marxist, and that they are trying to defund the police, release prisoners, et cetera, et cetera? How much truth do you see in that?
Well, it's true. I mean, the founders themselves have said it. So it is true. That's not a conspiracy theory. That's not an opinion. The two out of the three founders themselves have explicitly said on record that they are Marxists, right? They are trained Marxists. If you go on their website, they have some of those things you mentioned: defund the police, disrupt the Western prescribed nuclear family structure. On BLM UK, they have talks of dismantling capitalism. So these are not things that are made up. These are things that are loud and clear on their website.
So what about the masses who are following them? Don't they understand this? Are they being duped?
Well, I think most people are good-hearted. Most people in the world have good intentions. And most people, including people close to me, are not familiar with Black Lives Matter, the organization, right? They just hear what it says on the tin.
Yeah.
And it's very cleverly named, of course, because, look, every decent person agrees with the statement that Black Lives Matter. I'm 100% on board with that, and I believe vast majority of people are. But look, if the organization had a different name, it would be much easier to have these conversations because people can easily delineate between the organization and the slogan. But they've cleverly made them one and the same so that any criticism of BLM, the organization, people can easily accuse you of being racist or claiming that, you know, Black lives don't matter. And I think some, you know, I certainly think that some positive has come out of this. Lots of people are having conversations that perhaps are overdue or are necessary. But there's also a downside to it. There is a lot of increased division. If you look at what's going on in the U.S., it looks like racial tensions and just overall tensions are getting worse rather than better. You know, maybe that'll change in the long run, but right now it doesn't look great.
And do you believe that is a kind of aim of Black Lives Matter, the group?
Wow. Oh, man. I don't know. I don't know what's in their hearts. But I'm not convinced.
But it's scary stuff, isn't it? You know, if you follow what I mean.
Well, yeah, I'm not convinced that it's all, you know, positive. My view on it is pretty cynical. And it's not, that's not new either. I mean, I looked into this group many years ago. I think they were founded in 2015, I believe. And there was a time period where there were a lot of high profile police killings of people in general and Black people, the ones that the media latched onto. So I can understand it from an emotional, anecdotal standpoint, how someone would look at that and be like, oh my gosh, let me go join this protest, Black Lives Matter. But look, they've raised hundreds of millions of dollars as far as I'm aware. And no one even knows where that money is going, clearly, right? They're not a charity. They're set up as some type of organization. I can't remember what it's called, but it's not a charity. And they are not transparent with that money. If they've raised hundreds of millions of dollars, it should be very clear where that money is going. And there are a lot of questions around that. So before people donate to anything, I think they should know how that money is going to be spent and where it's going to go and who's behind it, etc.
What do you make of the media coverage of it, particularly, say, the BBC in this country? Do you think they've been too biased, too sympathetic to both the organization and the message?
Yeah, well, I've only seen some of it, to be honest. I don't even own a television, so I'm not a super avid news follower. I just kind of see what I see. And yes, I do think, again, and I think it's all intentional given the name, right? You know, because parsing out the organization from the movement, from the statement, are different things. We're kind of dealing with three different beasts here when someone says Black Lives Matter. And, you know, if you criticize one aspect of them, people take that as a, you know, total not support of any of the thing, or that you're opposed to the statement itself, which is just not true. So I do think a lot of people in the media and individuals, companies, et cetera. I mean, I've had these conversations with people. I know a lot of people, including Black Americans, including many Black Americans, who have DM'd or emailed me over the past couple of weeks and expressed their concerns with both the organization and some of the things that are resulting from the increased tension. And so I'm not sort of speaking alone. A lot of people are afraid to speak. So when I talk, it seems like, you know, for everything I say, there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people who think the same thing I do, but they don't feel that they're in a position to voice it, or they don't have as large a platform as I do. So like I said, I think, look, racism is a real thing in society. It's not anywhere near as bad as it used to be. It's something that still exists. It's something that we want to stamp out and we want to get rid of. But I think that that can be done without creating unnecessary division and making things, if we're not careful and they're not careful, it's going to end up making things worse, and it'll end up being a step backwards rather than a step forward. And that's ultimately what I personally worry about.
Okay, and just before we go to the break, very quick question, quick answer if possible. Is Britain a racist country?
In my opinion, no. There is racism in Britain, but I would not say that Britain is a racist country.
Okay, thanks very much indeed. That's Zuby, and that's just the first 15 minutes. We'll take a short break, and then we're back with the rapper, the author, the podcaster, the fitness fanatic, Zuby. Straight after this short break. Don't dare go away.
Shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here.
Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, shooting from the lip.
Okay, welcome back to the second part of Shooting from the Lip with my special guest today, Zuby. Zuby, can we just go on just for a moment? I want to move on to other subjects like Donald Trump, even J.K. Rowling, the pandemic, the lockdown, etc. But let's just finish off, if we can, with BLM. What did you make of the violence that erupted at the end of the first protest? And then, indeed, the following week, when the patriots, as they like to describe themselves, came down to defend the statues that had been damaged the week before. What's your views on that?
Okay, is this in the UK specifically?
Yeah, UK mainly, yeah.
So firstly, I condemn violence and criminal behavior, period. I'm not someone who makes any kind of excuses for it. I understand people get angry, people get upset. This happens to all of us, but me being angry or upset does not make it okay for me to commit any type of crime or do violence against people, right?
Good.
And I think it's totally backwards that you're protesting violence using violence. I think it's a massive shame that in the US, for example, more people died, far more people ended up dying in the riots that ensued than the person who died to begin with. And I think that's not, I just don't think that's the way forward. And it seems extremely hypocritical to me. In terms of what happened in the UK and the backlash towards it, firstly, I think the backlash was quite predictable. I think it was obvious that when people started tearing down, defacing statues, fighting police, et cetera, you're going to get a counter-reactionary movement on the opposite police side that's going to come out and want to defend that and fight people. The whole thing's pretty ugly. Look, I think taking it up one level, I think in the UK, if people are going to have these protests and are going to be making these statements, et cetera, I think people need to be very clear on what they are trying to combat, because we can't pretend that the UK has the same police brutality issue or the police killing issue as the US. That's an asinine statement.
Absolutely.
It's simply not true. So if people are going to be protesting in the UK or, you know, having signs against the police or chanting Black Lives Matter, et cetera, I think people need to be clear on what they want, right? What are the demands? What's the thing that's being protested against? What are specific things that can be done to make things better rather than just, you know, let's just go out with some signs in the middle of a pandemic, FYI, and let's just go out and make noise and fight police and tear down statues that have nothing to do with what this whole thing started with. So yeah, those are kind of my thoughts. I just try to think of what's productive. You know, what's productive? I get that people get emotional, people get angry, some people want to, and you know, there's a time and there's a place for that, and that can be channeled in a good way. But if people want to make things better than worse, then it needs to be focused.
I haven't got a clear idea of what they're protesting for, apart from some vague idea of equality, which no one would argue with. But what about the actual statues? I mean, when they pulled down the statue in Bristol, I mean, and when we know about the history of Colston, it's better that it's gone. It wasn't right the way it went, is my kind of opinion. And we need to have this debate, even if they want to have the debate about Nelson's Column. Let's have the debate. But we can't let the mob rule, can we?
Yeah, no, I agree with your position. I mean, I actually went to school in Bristol for 5 years. So obviously, I know that statue in question, seen it many times. During my time in school, whether it's myself or any other black students, none of us had a I don't remember anyone ever expressing any sort of issue with it or people having a problem with it back in those days. But yeah, look, I think in terms of any public statue, essentially, I think, look, everything is up for criticism and everything is up for debate. But I agree with you, what you can't do is simply having small mobs of people, you know, 20, 30 people, just deciding what should stay and what should go, because that's not how our society is supposed to work, okay, right? We're supposed to live in a democracy. If people have a problem with the statue, then, you know, you can do a referendum. Let the people of Bristol have a vote and see, okay, do you guys want this statue here? This is the history, et cetera. Should we leave it up? Maybe you can put a plaque explaining some of the context of it to give it a little update? Or do you want this to just be taken down or moved to a museum or whatever? You know, poll the people, find out what they want, do it democratically. And then, yeah, so be it.
Okay, it's moved on, though, from statues. It got to a ridiculous thing where they were trying to ban Basil Fawlty in Little Britain. I mean, Little Britain's slightly different because they were blacking up. But you know, and then books. Certain books are not allowed. And then some idiot the other day has scrawled on Dickens's museum that Dickens was a racist. Well, undoubtedly, by the values of today, he had racist views. But we can't have this cultural revisionism, can we?
Look, I'm not a fan of it. I mean, I'm sure you've read 1984 as well.
It
wasn't supposed to be an instruction manual. It was supposed to be a warning. And, you know, I have friends who have grown up in the Soviet Union. You know, I know people from Venezuela. I've spoken to people who have lived in, you know, I grew up in the Middle East. I've seen people in all sorts of different situations and places that have had, you know, much darker histories and things like that. And they tend to be the ones who are the most concerned about what's going on, because they're like, man, this has very scary echoes of, you know, what happened in my country or what my parents lived through, et cetera. So again, I think the dangerous thing, look, we're supposed to be learning from history, not tearing it down. And the past is always immutable. History is history. We can't change that. I think it's important to understand history and to look, I think when most people look at, you know, going back to the U.S., I think when most people think about Thomas Jefferson or George Washington, they don't think of them as slaveholders, right? That's not why those men are prominent and famous and are remembered. Yes, they were technically, and they lived in a totally different time period, and we can be critical and should be critical of that aspect. But yeah, like you alluded to earlier, expecting people who lived 400 years ago or even 100 years ago to be totally on board with, to have the exact same views as we do now here in 2020 after all this progress has been made, it's just silly. It's a very juvenile, it's a very immature way of looking at the world. And I'd imagine that 200 years from now, none of us are going to live up to whatever the moral standards of, you know, the year 2220 are, you know.
What about reparations? Do you believe that reparations should be paid to the ancestors of slaves?
Oh boy, man, we're going hard in this. Oh man, it's not something I can answer quickly. I think there's a few big questions. I think it's, well, okay, number one, are they owed? Number two, if they are, then how much? I think the next question is, if so, who pays it and who does it go to? And yeah, I think those are all sort of complicated questions in themselves. And I sort of have a view on each one personally, but I don't know. I think it's very complicated, and I can understand both sides of it. To give a sort of summary, I honestly don't believe that it's something that would happen, right? I believe that politicians will be happy to talk about reparations and float the carrot to get certain people to vote for them. I do not believe, and this could just be my general governmental sort of skepticism, that I don't believe that they'd actually do it. I think they'll use it as a carrot, and I think they'd use it to garner votes, but I don't think they'd actually do it. And this is interesting because they were talking about it last year in 2019 when you had all the Democratic candidates. They were talking about reparations, and they've gone radio silent on that in 2020.
Do you believe the battle should be based on race or based on class?
Neither. I don't view the world as a battlefield. It's funny that I end up having these conversations because I would quite happily never talk about race again ever in my life because I don't particularly care about it. Like, it's not, in terms of all the things that are interesting about people, it's literally at the bottom of the list for me. If I look at my friends, if I look at my own family, if I look at, you know, my acquaintances, people I've worked with, et cetera, it's literally skin deep. It's something, yeah, okay, we can all see what each other look like. But in terms of whether or not I like with someone or I agree with them or whatever, and then in terms of class as well, it doesn't matter. You know, like, I'm a musician. I've traveled all over the UK, got fans all over the country. I've met all these people, you know, different socioeconomic groups, different races, different ethnicities, different whatever. And, you know, there are great people and there are terrible people in every demographic.
Well said. Okay, let's move on to something that affects us all, the pandemic. How do you think Boris Johnson has coped with it in this country? And do you believe the lockdown should be easing?
I think he needs to open the gyms right now. I'm tired of not having gone to the gym. I need the gyms open yesterday.
I can't understand why he hasn't opened the gyms when you consider the things that he has opened.
Yes, yeah. Like, the gyms not being open to me is just a farce now. It's quite irritating. In general, I think the UK has handled it okay. I think when it comes to this pandemic, regardless of what country you're talking about, I'm just going to say what I think nobody else says. Look, none of us really knew what was going on. This goes for the so-called experts. This goes for the politicians. It goes for the media, et cetera. Yeah. If you see how many times the story changed, the advice changed, the models changed, the science changed, et cetera, it takes years to become an expert on something. And the novel coronavirus only started becoming a thing to us in January. So nobody is actually an expert on this particular disease. Even if you are a virologist, even if you are a doctor, nobody is an expert and none of us really know. And so, sure, I know there's a natural tendency to want to blame, look up at the top and blame the politicians, but we just don't know. And it's still too early to know what the long-term effects are.
Absolutely.
We don't know. I think in 3 years' time, we'll be able to look back and say, okay, this country handled it well. You know, this mayor, this governor, this politician handled it well, et cetera. But right now, we don't know. Okay. You know, was the way to do it the way Sweden did and not have a lockdown at all? Maybe. Maybe in the long term, that's the best way. Maybe you'll find some of the countries that had a very strict lockdown did it better, but we don't know.
Sensible attitude. Let's finish off by talking about Trump. Straight question. Is he going to get reelected, in your opinion?
At the beginning of the year, I would have said absolutely. Now, he needs to be careful. I don't know now. I think in the past couple weeks, the past couple months, he's lost a bit of his mojo. He hasn't been handling things anywhere near as well as he could. And he's had a great opportunity to as well. There have been many times during this that you've had a great opportunity to sort of step up in a crisis and show great leadership. And I'm not personally convinced that he's done that. In American politics, things change very, very quickly. And there are still a few months to go until the election. But I don't know. Like okay. I said, beginning of the year, I would have, you know, strong economy, pre-pandemic, et cetera, I would have been like, yes.
But Joe Biden, could he really be the president of the United States of America?
I don't think he should be. If I were American, like I'm pretty open about this, if I were American, I would vote for Trump. I'm not someone who's ashamed to say that. To be honest, though, again, I think the fact that it does just always amaze me that in a country of 330 million people, that those are the two options. And I'm no Trump hater. I'm more sort of, you know, defensive of him than most people are, certainly in my world. But it's quite astonishing that those are the options. Of all the people the Democrats could have nominated, you've had 4 years telling us how terrible Trump is. And then you put up Joe Biden, who has a lot of the same, you know, issues and is far less energetic and less charismatic. And he's in a cognitive decline. He's old and he's really showing it. And a part of me almost feels a little bit sorry for him in a weird way. Like, you know, as someone who's more elderly, I'm kind of like, man, he shouldn't even really be, he's done his service. Like he shouldn't sort of be out there, you know, bumbling around and making these statements, which aren't even comprehensible. Yeah.
And you've done your service. Zuby, thanks for joining me today. You've been listening to John Gaunt with my special guest, Zuby, today. I found that fascinating. Hope you did. Next week, I'll be back with another guest who will be just as forthright, I hope, here on Sputnik International, Shooting from the Lip, with me, John Gaunt. Thanks for listening.
Shooting from the Lip.
If you've got a view, I want to hear it. If you agree, I want to hear it. If you disagree, get in touch. Tell me why I'm wrong, but you better have a good argument.
This is Shooting from the Lip.